Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. As has been said, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today I have as a special return guest Cyrus Webb, who is a prominent radio host, and he is president of Conversations Media Group, home of Conversations Live Radio, Conversations Magazine, and Conversations Book Club, not to mention Shadow Play Entertainment. He also is an author, and we're going to be talking about his new book today. Since 1999, he's used his love of the arts and books to create a brand that has not only showcased his own work, but that of others around the United States. To date, he has hosted hundreds of art shows and poetry readings around the South, garnering thousands of attendees and a devoted following. In 2003, he began to host and produce the radio show Conversations Live on WMPR 90.1 FM in Jackson, Mississippi. Today, it's heard not only in the South, but online through blogtalkradio.com and dcnowradio.com. Millions tune into the program, which features authors, recording artists, community leaders, and ordinary individuals doing extraordinary things, as is Cyrus. And so with that said, I'd like to welcome him. Cyrus, how are you today?
Doing really good. Thank you so much for having me back, David. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, I really enjoy my interviews with you, whether you're on my show or you are interviewing me. And as the numbers would have it, I have a lot of people that listen to the shows that I have you on. So, of course, I want to have individuals like that back on, since that's where there seems to be interest, and I can understand why. So, anyhow, you have a new book out, and I'd like to take a few moments, even though I said that we would do this later, to talk about the book, which is called Words I Choose to Live By. It just came out a week ago. It's available on Amazon in paperback at a very reasonable price, as well as Kindle. And Cyrus, would you tell us a little bit about the book and how you came to write it?
Oh, without a doubt. And again, thank you so much, David, for the opportunity. You know, Words I Choose to Live By really began with just that. I was doing these daily affirmational quotes for myself, and I was sharing them with some of my friends, and they said, hey, you ought to start sharing those on Facebook, you know, with your friends there. And so I started posting them on social media, and I would get such an overwhelming response to them, people not only liking them but sharing them and seeing how much it inspired them. And it really was, David, for me, a way of being able to focus my day you know, to think of something that I would want to choose to focus on instead of, you know, what I didn't get done yesterday or, you know, what may come my way, a way of looking at my life differently. And I actually had a publisher, Benita & Hodge Publishing out of Memphis. The acquisitions editor is a friend of mine, and she saw the post on Facebook, saw the interaction, and she contacted me and she said, "Stop posting them on Facebook. I want to offer you a book deal." And that's really how it happened. You know, it was really just that, I don't know if you'd say easy, but it was just that simple. And that was in January, and now here we are at the end of the year, and the book is released.
Well, you know, you talked about it not being that easy, but being simple. And I think that's the way spiritual laws work. When the time is ripe for something to appear, it just falls into place very nicely. And obviously, there is a need for this. I'd like to just read a few lines from one of the reviews that Cyrus received on Amazon. Words I Choose to Live By is Cyrus Webb's latest fine offering to a world in desperate need of salve and balm for the soul. Webb's book is a clearly structured primer of weekly topics, daily reflections, and a call to bring one's best self forward into life to inspire yourself and others. I see this fine work as a guiding force for good, from lifting up the downcast on wings as eagles to motivating entrepreneurs at any point of the road to success. And whether you're an entrepreneur or just a ordinary person with a dream to cherish and hopefully fulfill, I believe that affirmations are such an important tool to use, and I've used them for years, and certainly will be interested in getting a copy of your book, Cyrus. I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to see it before the interview today. Now, since I haven't seen the book, could you give us an idea of some of the affirmations that are in it? I realize I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, sure. No, that's fine. And thank you for sharing that review. You know, I've been so humbled by the response so far, David, to the book. And I'm so glad that people are realizing and getting really what was the motive, and that was that our outlook on life and the way that we approach each and every day is really a choice. We can choose to focus on what isn't going right, on, you know, on the injustices that are out there, or we can choose to focus on the fact that, you know what, I'm going to do my part today to make the world better. And I think that is something that each one of us has the power to do. You know, the way that the book is structured, David, actually is there's something for every day of the year. And it's actually separated into 52 weeks in the book. You don't have to start, you know, whenever you get the book. Some people are starting at the very beginning. Others are, you know, maybe picking up, you know, where the year is and may start over. But what I do at the beginning of every week is I actually have a theme. And I just happen to pick up the book and turn to week 24. And the theme for that week is no expiration date. And the thought that I wanted people to think about for that week is this: your goals and dreams have no expiration date. As long as there is breath in your body, they can still be achieved. And that is so true. I've experienced that in my life, you know, and I know other people will appreciate that too. But there will be individuals out there, David, I know you've experienced this, that will tell you, oh, that time has passed, or that's not going to be able to happen for you. Maybe if you were younger or lived here or there, that might happen. But I want people to realize that as long as they're living, they have the opportunity to do something great. They just have to embrace it. And so that's kind of how the book is outlined. Each week has its own theme, and then every day there's something to go along with that theme to help to motivate you throughout the day.
Well, I think that is such an important affirmation and something that a lot of people might need to be reminded of. Certainly when I was a kid and saw Pinocchio and heard the song, "When You Wish Upon a Star, Your Dreams Come True," I believed every word of that. And then somewhere along the way, I lost faith. I lost faith in myself. I lost faith in my dreams. And I think that happens to a lot of people. And so I'm wondering what you could say that would inspire other people to recognize that they do have the potential to create their own reality and to realize their dreams.
You know, I think the thing is, for one, David, and I think you have done this as well, I think the importance of what you surround yourself with and who you surround yourself with. You know, I think, you know, we're bombarded 24 hours a day of different things that try to get us our attention or try to tell us who we are or what we can do. And we have to realize, again, the choice we have of what we surround ourselves with. So one, I would say, you know, choose to surround yourself with people who are going to build you and to encourage you instead of to try to downgrade you and discourage you in what you want to do. But I think also realizing that you are worthy of greatness. You are worthy of great things, and that it's not limited to a certain number of people or a certain type of person. And I think if people realize that, that there's no one better than you, there's no reason why if someone else did something that you can't do it, I think that in itself is the great primer for them to realize, you know what, it's just about the way I choose to approach it.
Well, certainly you speak to the need for self-esteem.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in terms of somebody that has low self-esteem, if an affirmation is enough for them to develop a better sense of self. What do you think about that?
You know, I think, you know, and I've been there myself. I've been in that place where, you know, you feel as though you are not, you know, enough for whatever you may want to be, or that someone has convinced you of that fact that you'll never be that. And I know what that's like, and I know what that can lead to. You and I have talked about it, I think, in our previous conversation, you know, how it almost drove me to suicide. You know, and so,
yeah.
You know, those things can kill you. I think the thing, you know, for me when it comes to that is what happened with me, and I can speak from my own experience, is the realization of I was created for a reason. And I think once I realized that and truly embraced that, embraced what that meant, that I was put here for a particular reason, that helped create a shift in me, David, and to realize, you know what, why am I feeling any less than? You know, why am I feeling like I can't do something? I'm here for a reason. It really just becomes, you know, me realizing what that reason is and then walking toward that reason every day.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you discovered that reason. Maybe if you would back up and tell us a little bit about your journey. You talked about that dark night of the soul that you had when you felt inclined towards suicide, and I certainly can relate to that. I've had that experience myself, and I also totally agree with you that it's so important to choose people, places, and things that uplift you. It is so important to choose positive thoughts, which create positive vibrations. We live in a vibrational universe, and what we put out is what we get back. And a lot of people don't seem to realize there's a law of cause and effect at play, and they choose to remain victims through negative programming that repeats itself over and over. So let's back up and talk a little bit about your journey from boyhood to present, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, sure. You know, and like I said, you know, the reason why I can relate to the idea of having the low self-esteem is because I've been in that place. And it's something that so many people, I think, regardless of where they live, you know, there's so many people that deal with that. And, you know, it comes to a point where you begin to almost believe the script of other people. You know, just because someone else wasn't able to achieve something, you then, you know, take that script upon yourself and think, well, if they weren't able to do it, I can't do it. Or, you know, if I don't look this way, or if I don't talk this way or live in this place, I can't do it. And I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the realization that really has nothing to do with it. You know, and I think about, you know, there's so many great people who have done great things that did not come from greatness. But they realized the greatness within them, and they realized the opportunity that they each had to produce something great, and that is what was able to propel them forward. And I think when we think about that, and again, there's so many that history has shown us, so many for those who are believers that the Bible shows us that, you know, may not have come from the best of circumstances, but they were able to create great things, and it really began with the idea of them realizing that they, again, were created for something bigger, and that the one who created them, you know, intended for them to do something bigger.
Absolutely. I mean, I think of people like Maya Angelou, Oprah Winfrey,
right,
who both had childhoods where they were abused and neglected, and look at the impact that they made upon the world. And there are so many people like that. And I like what you were saying about not taking on other people's life scripts. And I believe it's important to rewrite your own life script.
Right.
And certainly searching for the reason that you talked about before is a wonderful way to do that. How did you search for the reason for your being here?
You know, it almost was for me, and again, you know, going back to that point for me back in 96, you know, it almost was for me realizing that, you know what, if I am created for something bigger, how can I find that out? And that is what drove me, you know, to really look at the Bible in a different way, to look at, you know, the different accounts over there, not to think of them so much as stories. I know as kids we were told about the Bible stories, but I really started looking at them as real people, real situations, you know, in history. And that mm-hmm. was, you know, I think a great thing for me to be able to realize that, you know what, these were people just like me, you know, who were put in situations that, you know, others would have said, you know, there's no way they can get out of this. And realizing that, you know what, if my Creator was able to help them through them, that He could help me. And that's really what happened for me, you know, the realization that my life was so much bigger than me, so much bigger than anything I could have wanted, you know, for myself. And when I realized that and started relying more on Him for my guidance, you know, and direction and my purpose, I saw my whole world change.
Well, I can relate to that, too. And I liked what you were saying about looking at the people in the Bible instead of just the storyline, because people can teach us through example how to find our way. They can serve as inspirations. They can serve as role models. We can emulate them. We can take a look at what their trials and tribulations are, what their particular challenges are, how they may have struggled, and reframed it as a challenge and overcome those struggles through their faith, through their reliance on God. And I think the Bible is a wonderful source of wisdom if people pick and choose that which lifts them up, because I find that there are some passages in the Bible that inspire fear in me, and I choose not to dwell on those things. I look for whatever lifts me up. I don't know how you deal with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think even, honestly, David, for me, it helped me to even reexamine fear, you know, and with the way I looked at fear when it came to
mm-hmm.
that, because I for me, it became more about a fear of displeasing more so than a fearful, you know, I'm afraid you're going to do something to me. You know, so it became more of a relationship for me, you know, realizing that for me, it really was a father and son. That's how I looked at it, and how you want to make your father proud, and you don't want to do anything that's going to cause your father to be disappointed in you. And, you know, and again, that was part of the shift for me, to really think about it as something tangible, something real. And that was a big help for me in looking at my life and the direction, knowing that my father wanted the very best for me.
It sounds like you were able to turn your fears around into something that was constructive and something positive.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Almost like how we were afraid to get bad grades and bring that report card home. you know your parents are
right.
going to kill you because of that, but you know you know they're going to be disappointed. You know, and you know, and I think that's kind of how my fear evolved, is more of, you know, realizing that even though I'm going to make mistakes, not to do anything that will intentionally disappoint my father.
Well, fear is a very real human emotion,
right?
And I've heard it said by the great mystic and Jesuit Anthony de Mello that there are only two states, fear and love, and that anything that is not love is fear. So I think that it's important, as I've come to see, and speaking from my own experience, to look at the shadow side of myself that evolved and was generated by fear. And to embrace that as part of my human experience without judging it and move forward into the light of a new day and to move towards those qualities that I wished to possess that I did not believe I possessed and affirm that I possess them in the now moment so that I could start moving in that direction. And I believe that time is not linear as we perceive it, that it's all happening now. And that is why it is so important to practice affirmations in the now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And I think, you know, that is why, especially with Words I Choose to Live By, David, what I wanted to do is to make them more action. And, you know, there I just opened up the book again and turned to one that is built for a Monday, and it's waking up today was a privilege. Show your appreciation for it by doing something that will impact the world for good. You know, those are all action things. And I think, you know, when we realize that our life really is about moving forward, I think that really, you know, is part of that shift and realizing that, you know what, you can't stay stagnant. You have to be able to keep moving.
What role do you, speaking of appreciation, what role do you think gratitude plays for you and for people in this life?
A big role. A big role. Because I believe, you know, and even with the book, I mean, with the pre-orders for the book was just amazing, and Amazon started releasing the pre-orders early, so I started getting the reviews actually last week before the book actually released on Sunday, and you know, just the way that people were sharing pictures. I got over 36 pictures, David, from across the country of people holding up their book and, you know, and sharing them on Facebook. And you know, and what a humbling thing that was for me to, you know, that they would take out the time for one to order the book, but then to want to show people and to tell people about it. You know, and I thought about that, too, with the reviews, you know, with the reviews coming in. You know, it really is an amazing thing. And I that gratitude that I feel is something that will continue to grow.
Well, you know, I once asked a minister, she's identifies herself as an urban metaphysical minister. Her name is Harriet Walden. I asked her what the most important prayer was, and she said simply, thank you.
Thank you.
And
I agree.
That struck, yeah. I mean, gratitude to me opens the door to more things to be grateful for. I see it as the doorway to abundance, and that abundance is all that God wants for any of his children. And so many people have limited vision around that and don't believe that they're worthy, again, as you were saying. And it's so important to thank God for each and every blessing. And how would you encourage people to do that who are struggling and who are facing life circumstances that they don't appreciate? What kinds of things would you say that they could be grateful for?
You know, I think, you know, it really goes to, again, making it personal. And we know how we feel when someone says to us, good job, or thank you, or congratulations, how that makes us feel validated almost. And it also makes us feel as though someone realizes what we've done. I think, you know, the thing is sometimes we are quick to receive that, but maybe don't realize the importance of giving that. And I think if we can think about that, looking for ways, and again, it goes back to the action, David, for me, looking for ways that you can show gratitude. And that could be little things, you know, little things in your neighborhood, little things in your home, little things for those that you work with. And I think being able to do that and to create the habit of gratitude, because then it's not something that we feel like we have to do. I think we feel like we want to do it.
What about a gratitude journal? That's something that Oprah Winfrey inspired people to do, to write down, I believe it was 5 things every day that they were grateful for.
You know, I think that may be a great step. You know, for me, to be honest with you, when I first started, as I was mentioning earlier about the affirmations, the idea initially came from me. I can't take credit for the initial idea, because the initial idea came from a book I read by author Patricia Monahan, who you may know. She was published by New World Library, and she wrote a book called Meditation 101, and she shared 101 ways of meditation, and one of the ways was journaling. And that was the one that I said, you know what, that sounds like something I could do. And so I chose that. And I could immediately tell a difference. For one thing, of making it a part of my daily life, you know, of course we know that then makes it a habit, makes something that we just do automatically. And that now has led to the book. you know, and being able to have that. So, you know, I think the gratitude journal is great. I think, you know, anything that we can do that kind of sets the stage for it becoming a way of life, I think it's a great thing.
What has been the benefit of journaling for you, and what kind of journaling do you do?
You know, for me, what I try to do is I used to, when I was younger, and when I say younger, I'm talking 20 years ago, I would focus more on what has been. Now I appreciate the value of the moment, what I'm doing now, what I want to do. And I found that that helps me not only to appreciate where I've been able to come from and to be able to accomplish, because I think, I don't know if you have this problem, David, but one of the problems I have is, you know, we get so caught up on that big thing, like appearing on, you know, the national news or appearing on Oprah. We don't take the time to savor the little things that we've been able to do along the way. And now what I try to do is every day is to appreciate the little things, the little milestones, like an Amazon review, like, you know, a new like on my fan page, and or someone sending me a message saying, you know what, something you said on the air really personally touched me. Thank you. You know, those little things, savoring that and realizing that that is just as big as anything else I could imagine. So, you know, those are the kind of things I try to take the time to savor that and to really appreciate it, because I think if we don't, we then take it for granted and then feel as though we're owed it, and we're not owed anything. You know, and so I think that whole thing has been a part of what has helped me to become more grateful and also more appreciative.
Well, I like the way you talk about appreciating the things that are present in your life today. One thing that I've discovered and have heard said by many people of faith is how important it is to live for the day. And you mentioned that in so doing, you were able to embrace the totality of your life.
Right.
And that answered a question I was going to ask you previously about whether you've come to appreciate those dark hours in your life and the struggles that you had dealt with in the past.
You know, not only do I appreciate them, I'm now thankful for them. And the reason I'm thankful for them, my reason is because it helps me to become more empathetic to others and to understand better where people are coming from. There used to be a point in my life where I would hear people talk about things and think, how in the world did they end up in that situation? Or how did they, you know, end up doing X, Y, or Z? Now I can understand it. I can understand, and it definitely makes me more empathetic to, and less quick to judge, because, you know, we are very quick to feel as though we are the authority on things. I was saying, how could you do that? Or, you know, whatever, I would never do that. You know, but now I realize, you know what, none of us really know what we will do in situations. We look at some of the high-profile individuals who have, you know, been on the highest of highs and seen how they've come crashing down and seeing, you know, the sad ends to their lives. And I think, you know, we have to be very careful to realize that we are all in this thing called life together. And to better appreciate one another, we have to be able to think outside of our own situation and step outside of our shoes and be willing to step inside the shoes of someone else and to see the world as they're having to see it.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head, and empathy is such an important quality to develop. And as you said, you developed it through having gone through your own struggles and your own dark hours, which has helped you to appreciate and relate to other people and perhaps to give of yourself to people that so are in so desperate need of receiving that empathy. Let's talk a little bit about giving and receiving in terms of the spiritual dynamics of that. What do you perceive as the benefit of giving? And how should giving be framed?
You know, I think part of the problem with society today, and I'm going to say especially here in the States, is that, you know, giving almost comes with an asterisk. And that for a lot of people, because even in the time of the year that we're in today, you know, we want to give, but we want, what am I going to get out of it? What am I going to get?
Yeah.
What do you have for me? And I think that's what we have to stop doing. And it's not easy because we are, I think, by nature, even as a child, I was still as a child, I was very selfish, you know, and I didn't want you playing with my toys. And yeah, you know, I didn't want you playing with my toys. And, you know, that was, you know, my mom. And, you know, and I would get very upset, you know, if you would take something that I felt like was mine or be friends with someone that I thought was my friend. You know, you can't be that person's friend, you're mine. And so I think forgiving, we have to realize, just as the scripture tells us, it is so much more beneficial to give than to receive. And that giving, I think, can come in many ways. For myself personally, one of the biggest things I give is my time. And I realize that for some people, that's all they need. They need to know that you see me. They need to know that they matter. And that whatever they're going through, even if I can't completely relate to it, that at least I'm trying to be there for them so they don't feel like they're alone. And I think, you know, I'm sure you can, you know, attest to this as well, David. So many people, that's their biggest thing. They feel as though they're alone. They feel as though that no one understands and appreciates them. And so they end up doing harmful things to themselves. That's what happened to me. So I think, you know, that giving for me, of giving of time, you know, giving of energy, and, you know, and showing people that, you know what, I'm here for you. I think that is one of the biggest things that we can do.
I absolutely agree. You know, one thing that bothers me when I go to church is the church I go to is a wonderfully affirming church, wonderfully open-minded, accepting, and all of those things. But they talk a lot about tithing. And to me, tithing is not only giving of treasure, but primarily giving of self. I think that what you were saying about time and understanding, that's the greatest treasure that anybody can give. And for somebody to focus on the monetary aspects might diminish them because they may not be in a position to give materially.
Right.
And,
I agree.
The other thing I wanted to reflect on as far as giving goes is that when you give without expectation, which is the way I believe it should be done, and I heard that from you too, then it is amazing what happens in return. The gift that comes to me when I give without any expectation is pure joy from the gratitude that's expressed by the person that I've given to. And that is a greater gift than anything I have held to treasure for myself.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree with that, David. And I think, you know, it's amazing how that happens. I have become so emotional this year. For one, you know, you and I haven't talked about this on the air, but I lost, you know, my best friend this year, my grandmother. She passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so, yeah, and, you know, and I was, you know, we were very close. And, you know, it all of this happening the way that it has with the success I've been able to have with the show and now with the book have really helped me through this time, because I don't have time to dwell. I don't have time to feel sorry for myself, because, you know, she, one of the things she said to me the day before she died is she wanted me to live. And I think, you know, she didn't just mean to breathe. She meant for me to actually to do something worthwhile with my life. And she felt like she had done that, and she wanted that for me. And I think, you know, I think that is the thing, you know, to realize that we can do amazing things. And it may not get us on the news. It may not get us, you know, the fame, but it will definitely help us in being able to be happier, healthier, and I think more aware.
How do people move in the direction of doing amazing things if they have no idea where to go, if they have no sense of direction? What would you suggest to them?
For me, and again, I can speak just from my own experience in this, it really begins with something that is genuine. You know, if you have a genuine love for something, I think it's very easy for you to be passionate about that thing and to be excited about it and to talk. You know, I think all of us, just like with yourself and what you do, you know, when you're passionate about something, it comes through. And I think if whatever that thing is for you that gets you excited, I think that's how you know. That's how you know that that is what your thing is. And then it's all about finding the avenue for that thing. For me, it was art. That's how my whole brand began, was with art and poetry. And, you know, and I was told, I went to an art gallery in Jackson, Mississippi, and was told that I could not hang my work there because that my work was for people who actually, you know, had more credentials. And I said to myself, okay. So I decided to go to a hotel and I rented a meeting space, and I had my own art show. And out of that art show, I had one of the guests came to the art show who happened to be the owner of WNPR 90.1 FM. He heard me speak, said, "Hey, you have a great voice. Have you ever thought about doing radio?" And I said, "No, never thought about it." He says, "Well, I'd like to give you the opportunity." And that's how the radio show was born. And so, but if I had allowed that person at that art gallery to tell, you know, to keep me from saying, "Okay, well, you know what, I didn't go to school, so I don't have any credentials, you know, I have no one, you know, speaking for me, I might as well just give it up." If I had listened to that, the rest of my life would have taken a totally different turn, I believe.
Well, it sounds like the thread that ran through that is what you were referring to earlier, which could serve as a guide to people, and that is to follow your passion. Because obviously your passion for art and not allowing somebody to diminish you that led you into a direction where you were given the gift of this amazing experience in radio, where you've become such a prominent radio show host and had never even considered that direction, had no background, didn't have any education in media, and here you are today. Look at that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the funny thing. You know, I believe everything, and what my life has taught me, though, David, is that if I think this is because I'm so great, then I haven't learned a thing in the past 10 years. Because by man's standards, none of what I've done over the past 10 years should have even happened. Because I have no broadcasting experience. I have nothing. But the other interesting thing about it is, going back to the passion, I go now and speak into colleges here in this state where I live in Mississippi. No one has ever asked me what college I went to myself. But based
That's
on
nice.
what I've done, they just assume that I'm an authority at what I do. And what that taught me was you can be an authority in something and not have any letters behind your name. You don't have to have any certification. You can be an authority just by living your life passionately and with purpose.
That is amazing. You know, it reminds me of something that the editor for my latest book wrote in for the back cover of the book. And she talked about how I was an expert in the realm based on 26 years of experience. And I think that life experience is indeed the greatest teacher that brings us to a position of having some authority and being able to show others a way based on one's own experience and the wisdom garnered along the way.
Right. I totally agree.
On the subject of wisdom, do you believe that it can only be attained through personal experience?
You know, that's a good question. You know, this is what I have found. And again, I keep going back to that, David, because I would never want to presume to speak for other people. But for myself, I've seen it work two ways. One, I think there is nothing wrong with learning, you know, from an outside force, something, you know, maybe, you know, whether you're learning from a class or from someone you have, you know, tutelage with, you know, but I think there is no exception, and there's no really, for me, there's really nothing that takes the place of life experiences. And that, to me, being the best of wisdom. I really believe that because, you know, just like I know, there are a lot of people, and I've talked to people who've gone to universities, who come out and say, "I have no idea what I believe. I know what I was taught, but I have no idea what I believe." And I think if we go through life being filled without ever really realizing how what we're filling ourselves with is going to affect us moving forward, I think that is one of the biggest regrets, I think, in life. But I think if we look at ourselves and say, okay, you know what, because like for myself, I wake up every day excited about what I'm going to learn. What is today going to teach me? What is going to unfold today that is going to make me not only better for myself, but put me in a better position to help somebody else? And I think those are things you can't teach. I think those are things you have to experience. And that's why, David, for me, I've even now come to the realization there is no failure. I used to believe that when I looked at things in my life that, you know what, I failed at that. And now I realize, you know what, I didn't fail at it because I learned something. it taught me something. It taught me maybe that's not the right time. Maybe that person is not the right person for you to be, you know, trying to do this with. Or maybe it's just not meant for you right now. Because sometimes we can get too excited and try to rush things that we're not even prepared for. And so I think about what I'm able to do in 2014, and I look at and think at about 2003 when this all began. There was no way I would have been prepared for this 11 years ago. I wouldn't have been. But my experiences now that I've learned, that I've gone through, and that I've now been able to use have put me in a position now where I can better appreciate it and use it to my advantage.
Well, I like the way you talk about there being no failure, and that is if you can learn the lesson.
Right.
Likewise, I think the same thing could be applied to so-called sin. I don't like that terminology because to me it implies shame and like bad boy, bad girl. The Aramaic translation of the translation from Aramaic of sin is simply missing the mark. And in so doing, we can learn from that experience and choose to change our behavior or our thoughts or, you know, future actions. You sound to me like a very humble man, and I think that that is one of the greatest marks that any individual can leave. You speak from your own experience. You do not, I've never heard you judge anybody. And it is such a human characteristic to judge and compare. And that's why on this show, I try to encourage people to find that common ground rather than get into a place of conflict. I mean, certainly we can express divergent opinions and beliefs if those exist, but there's no need to argue. That only leads to conflict and to strife. And I don't believe there's any reason for that to exist in this life. Do you?
I totally agree, which is why, to be honest with you, on my program, and you know, there's a lot going on in the news today that is not bringing us closer to the light. It's definitely, to me, it's, you know, delving further into the darkness of this world. And it amazes me that people will dwell on things at hours at a time, things that they know are going to disappoint them, make them angry, make them fearful, make them more judgmental. And instead of realizing that those are things that are not beneficial, it's not beneficial, which is why on Conversations Live, we don't, you know, a lot of the things that's been making the news, we have not even talked about it. And the reason why is not ignoring it, but it's realizing that all we're doing is when you start just talking about and talking about and talking about things like that and feeding yourself with that and sharing with others, you're bringing yourself down, you're bringing others down, and you're not going to be in a place that's going to bring you towards joy. You can't find joy that way. You can't find peace that way. You know, if you're so into anger, if you're so into, you know, feeling as though you are, you know, you don't matter, I think, you know, the thing for me is I look at life and I say, you know what, none of us are perfect. You know, all of us are going through something. But what can I do to make it better? What can I do to make it better where I am? What can I do to make it better starting with me? You know, and I think if we looked at life that way and focused on that 24 hours a day versus focusing on some of these things that are only going to bring us down, I think we would all be a whole lot better off.
Well, earlier you talked about learning and how important that is to you in your life, no matter what the means of the learning has been, even if it has involved dark moments or feelings of seeming failure at particular points in time. I had a lady that was demented. She was in her 90s and she was dying from cancer. And she would repeat herself over and over. And the one prominent theme that I would hear from her that I embraced as a real kernel of wisdom is that one never stops learning.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's the case for all of us. But if we have closed minds and are judgmental, that doesn't happen.
It doesn't. And, you know, my whole idea of even what success is, and I've talked about this openly on the show, I'm very careful now because I realize, just like with your platform, when you have people that are listening to you, people who are watching you, who believe you, I think that's the other thing. When you have that kind of trust, We have to be so careful with that. And I really try to remember that each and every time I go on the air, each and every time I post something or share something with someone, that this person is entrusting their beliefs with me and their time with me. And I never want to take that for granted. I never want to manipulate that to make it so that it's something that benefits me and my thinking. And, you know, I think, you know, that is one of the things I've learned is that, and my grandmother actually taught me that, I have to say, that, you know, we all have the ability to change things. Make sure you use that ability for good. And that's really what I try to focus on, making sure I'm using the platform that I have, whatever it may be, making sure I'm using that for good.
Well, that to me is leading the spiritual life. I have a minister who says that every thought is a prayer, and to take that to a step further, that would mean that every word or every action was a prayer. And to me, that's leading the spiritual life. And it is so important what comes out of our mouths. And I certainly have been hearing that between the lines with what you've been saying today. And I so appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell you, it definitely has been a work in progress. And again, like I said, these 11 years have definitely helped me in that regard, because I will have to say, you know, and just being honest with you, being very transparent, when I first came on the air in 2003, that first year I was, you know, it was dangerous for a moment. And I say that because I had the radio show that started, it picked up so quick and people were recognizing me and, you know, and all of that. And in 2004, I got an offer from our ABC affiliate to do a television show. So then I was on radio and television. And then I started writing for the state newspaper. So, you know, the brand was building itself a lot quicker than I could have expected. And there almost became a, and I can say this because it's the truth, and almost an entitlement of, well, you know, I want this. You know, this is what I want. Because I was looking at it as this was about me. And that is, and I'm so glad that happened early on, and I was able to check it and realize, you know what, sir, this is not about you. Because by that third year, I said, you know what, wait a minute. By 2006, I said, you know, Cyrus, this is not about Cyrus. And I noticed that some people were being turned off. And I started thinking, what happened? I'm on the radio, I'm on the I'm doing all of this stuff, but that was part of the problem. I was doing all of this stuff, and it was about Cyrus, you know, and I started to have to say, you know what, this is not about Cyrus. This is going to be more about how can I be of service to you? How can I use the media, the radio, the television to tell your story and to make this less about me? Because the show actually used to be called the television and radio show, David, Conversations with Cyrus Webb. I actually took off my name. Because what I wanted was to create something that could outlive me. So it became Conversations Live, both for, you know, the radio show and the television show. And the magazine used to be called Conversations with Cyrus Webb. It then became Conversations Magazine. And I noticed when I created that shift in 2006, I really started seeing the blessings coming in. Because it wasn't about what Cyrus was doing. It was about what these people were doing that I just had the privilege of being able to share.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you let go of ego. What are the pitfalls of ego besides some of the things that you've mentioned?
You know, I think the thing is to make us believe exactly what we're not supposed to believe, that the world really owes us something, you know. And I think that's the thing. I remember, I would say this happened after 2008. I remember the year, actually, that this particular incident happened. In 2012, I was a site that I was working with sent me a message and said that they heard that we were charging people for interviews on the radio, which is totally untrue. And I could, as soon as I read the email, you know how this goes, David, my ego definitely flared up. I'm like, you know, how dare you believe someone else, you know, over what we actually do. And I had to check that really quick and say, you know what, maybe something happened. Maybe there was a disconnect. Maybe they got me confused with another show. And I responded back, I'm sorry, you know, that you heard that, but that wasn't true. And you know what the email I got back? Cyrus, I'm so sorry, you're right. This was this show. And it went on. But if I had allowed my ego to say, you know, how dare you, you know, say that is not true, you're a liar, you know, I mean, that could have destroyed a relationship, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, I remember that because it can easily happen for any of us. Anytime we feel as though we are, what we have created is being threatened, or what we are is being threatened, you know, it's very easy for that to rise up and say, well, how dare you, you know, or how dare you feel that way, or how dare you think that, or how dare you say that to me, you know. But I think we, you know, we have to take that breath, say, okay, what caused you to say that, you know, in internally, what is causing that? And then to ask those questions and get that, because my response by email, you know, allowed them to then check it. But if I had gone at them abrasively, they probably wouldn't have checked anything, just said, wow, it must be true, you know, because look at the way he's responding to this, you know. It can definitely be dangerous. And it's something, honestly, as the brain is growing, David, every day I have to deal with that. I have to say, you know what, am I responding out of ego, or am I responding out of the best interest, out of what I'm trying to do? Because if we don't do that every day, we'll think we've mastered it, and I don't think we ever master it.
Good question. I don't know. I haven't mastered it yet. I can tell you that much. I believe in human potential. Now, I have a couple of questions. One is picking up on what you were saying. How do you deal with the flip side of ego when it's coming at you from somebody else? For instance, if somebody is being abrasive or obnoxious, I should say seemingly obnoxious, because for me to call somebody obnoxious is a judgment, but you know, it's just part and parcel of being human to observe things and attach labels to them.
You know, I really try to ask myself and then to ask them in a series of questions. You know, where is the, you know, what is it? What's causing this? Where is this coming from? And I find that when I'm able to do that, then I'm able to better understand where they truly are coming from. Because and you're right, a lot of times we perceive by the way people respond to things that they are being a certain way. When I know, just like for myself, I'm a lot more quiet spoken than a lot of people in my family. And, you know, people in my family who, and you may have the same experience, David, who are very loud and, you know, rambunctious in just their everyday life. This is who they are. So when they're having a conversation, their voices become even more loud and more, you know. And so it's like, okay, you know, so then it becomes, okay, is this just who you are? Or is something going on here, you know, that's deeper than that, you know? And that's what I try to do. That's what I try to get to. And you're exactly right. The other way is to not make a judgment, because I never know what has happened in that person's day that's led them to that moment, or what I may have said that may have triggered something that someone else has done or said to them that causes them to respond a certain way. So you're right. I mean, I think that's where that dialogue is so important, as well as the realizing that we all are dealing with things and making sure that we're not taking what that person is dealing with and making a judgment on that, who that person is.
Well, it all seems to go back to the metaphor in the Bible about, you know, not judging somebody until you've walked a mile in that man's shoes or woman's shoes. Really, there's a lot of truth in that. And, again, it comes down to learning experience. I'd like to ask you, what do you think is more powerful, thoughts, attitudes, or faith?
You know, for me, it's faith. It's definitely faith.
Me too.
And the reason why I say that for me is because the faith guides everything else, my thoughts, you know, and everything else. I mean, it all begins with faith. And that's why I'm so appreciative for having that as a foundation, as part of my foundation. And I will say, not just my faith in my Heavenly Father, my faith that he has given me in myself. And I think that is the other thing, you know, and that's why I say that is kind of the foundation, because if we don't feel as though, if we don't have the faith or the belief that we can do something, that we were meant for something. It goes back to how we began the conversation, actually. Then I can understand people not wanting to do anything or thinking that nothing can be done. You know, so I think it all has to, begin with the belief system.
Well, in the few minutes that are remaining, I'd like to talk about the topic of joy. You mentioned that word earlier, and I think that's so important. How do you manage to stay in a place of joy, and what do you do if you find yourself not in that place?
You know, I have to say, and this is an honest answer, for the past 5 years, I have been probably the most joyous I've been in my entire life. I wake up so excited about the opportunity of life, even with losing my grandmother in May. I know because of the talk I've had with her the day before that she had lived her life. She was happy with her life. And that's what I want to be. I want to live each and every day so that if this is it for me, if there's nothing else for me, that I can say that I lived a life of love and joy. And that's, I think, should be the hope of everybody, to be able to say, you know what, you know, regardless of what tomorrow may bring, that today is what I have and I want to make the most of it. And I think as far as slipping out of it, you know, it's been an emotional roller coaster for me since she passed, to be honest. Probably this is the closest death I've experienced in my life. And so, you know, for me, when I find myself slipping, I think about not only what she believed in me, but also, you know, the gift again that I've been given. And that as long as I'm here, there's more people to share it with. And I think that is what really keeps me focused and keeps me in that place.
How can people maintain consistent moments of joy? I heard Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham, say there's nothing more important than maintaining consistent moments of joy.
Yeah. You know, it can be difficult. And I'm not going to lie about that. It can be difficult based on where you are in your life, where you are in the world. That can be a very difficult thing to do. It's easier said than done. I really do believe that. But I think it begins within. And again, believing, you know, in yourself, again, believing in something larger than yourself, that you know what, this life is not all there is, that there is more to it and that you have the moving parts in you. You have the moving parts to do something. And I think, you know, that is one of the big things for all of us, is to remember that and to embrace it.
Well, there's so many things I'd like to ask you, but obviously we don't have time for today. You said that we need to remember this is not the only life there is. And to me, as a person of faith who believes in the afterlife, reincarnation, what have you, I certainly believe there's more to life than meets the eye. What would you say to a person who did not have that faith to inspire them?
Well, you know, I really think, David, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about even if this is all there is, to that we really have no excuse not to make the most of it. Because if this is all there is, you're not going to get another chance. So why not make sure that each and every day is filled with something that you can be proud of?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good note to end on. What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
Hey, well, thank you so much, Cyrus. I wish you much success with your book. And would you tell us the name of your other book out there? Is there more than one other book?
No. This is the only one that's out right now. And again, it's Words I Choose to Live By. And they can find out more information about it by going to the website, which is just wordsichoosetoliveby.com.
And when is your radio show on?
We're on actually four times a day. They can find the dates and times according to their time zone at conversationsliveradio.com. That'll give them all of the times and dates for each day of the week.
Okay. Thanks so much, Cyrus. Enjoy.
So thank once you, again, David. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.